Blog Talk Radio.
Somebody in a uniform, just let them know that you know that they're there. These programs are brought to you by Dr. Kathleen Carroll, a board-certified psychiatrist in private practice since 2003. Dr. Carroll previously was the director of inpatient services at the Bay Pines VA Hospital and the Bay Pines VA Medical Center. Dr. Carroll specializes in the treatment of children ages 6 and older and the treatment of adults, in other words, from the womb to the tomb. She's also an all-time triathlete. So if you're having a problem breaking through in any level of life or any level of sports, give her a call. She can help you out. Her offices are 336 East Bloomingdale Avenue in Brandon, Florida. And her phone number is 813-689-2466. Well, Z, we had, I don't know if I've had a chance to let you know or not, but we had a very nice letter from Pop Warner International on Wednesday that Mr. Brady Quinn, one of our co-host here is now a member of the All-American Academic Award winner team of for 2017. He has maintained for the last 4 years a 97.6 average. So we want to send our congratulations out there to Mr. Brady Quinn. Does a great job on the field, and he does a better job on the books. And his mama is a very proud mama.
Yeah, she has to be. She has to be.
Yep. She's done a tremendous job. She has she's raised those four boys on her own because the sperm donor left when they were just infants. So we don't even have any contact with him anymore. But it was an interesting week. we got. I don't know where to start. You got Perez coming up with dirty urine, so that means that the Deontay Wilder fight is off. But now I'm reading that Wilder wants to fight him anyway.
Luis Ortiz, he tested positive for steroids, and it's kind of early to me. The fight is, if I'm correct, in November.
Yes, November 4th.
But yeah, so I mean, it's essentially maybe a month away. With that said, Deontay, this is the third opponent that is positive for Deontay Wilder. So Povetkin. It was another guy, the guy that Gerald Washington stepped in for, and now it's Ortiz. So, I mean, I don't know if it's something to be said about some of the heavyweights in boxing or just the guys facing Deontay Wilder. Deontay, now, I didn't hear that he wanted to see him anyway. That's ludicrous to me. That's ludicrous to me. I don't care what advantage you have over a guy. Once you start introducing that into the mix of the competition, well, then now you're basically tainting all of the work.
Sure.
Not saying, and it's crazy because you have guys who they take this and they work, but it gets different results other than natural. And you're facing a guy who's doing one thing natural, and you're doing something. It's almost equating a human, going up against a machine.
Right.
And now, if everybody's doing it, that's unhealthy. Unhealthy for everybody to do it. But now, you're having more than one person doing it. Now you're having guys facing each other who are both popping positive. So, I mean, that was the case in quite a few MMA fights. I'm pretty sure it's the case in boxing also. It's just a shame that when you have these big fights and you want to get the heavyweight division going, and now these guys, Deontay, he's one of the biggest stars in the world. You're waiting for him, they're trying to, gonna eventually align him up to fight Anthony Joshua.
Right.
So now, he's trying to step up his competition, saying I wanna fight these guys. And these guys are popping positive against him. Now you have Povetkin, who would have been a step up for Wilder. Now you have Ortiz who's a step up for Wilder. These guys are popping positive. So say, well, Deontay doesn't have competition, and Deontay, who's he for? He's knocked out bums. Well, look at the guys who he's scheduled to face who are, quote, competition. They're taking supplements that are going to increase the chances for him, them to beat him. Stuff that, they're not allowed to take, and that presumably he's not taking. So, I don't, it's crazy for Deontay to even, want to risk his career and his life to deal with that. When, let Stavern step in. He was supposed to be on the undercard. I mean, just a month away. So you can build that up. You have other people
sure.
who could step in. You know, I heard that Dylan White wanted to step in.
Yeah, I heard that myself.
Let Dylan White step in because LeVern is a mandatory anyway. You know, after whoever won the Ortiz Wilder fight, LeVern would have been a mandatory. So why would you want to go and fight Ortiz? You know the guy. You know he failed the test. So now you're gonna say, well, just be clean. You know the month. No, forget that. Forget that. You messed up the money chance. Because now you're going to come and you're still going to get paid. You shouldn't have been dirty anyway. I don't know what advantages that has coming in. You had it in your system. Maybe, it'll still be in your system. I don't know that. I don't know what you're taking. But it's a shame for these guys, especially the top-level guys, to be doing this and going into the biggest money fights of their lives. I mean, you're ruining that. You're ruining that. That doesn't make sense to me. And you have a big thing about guys don't know what to put in there, what they're putting in their body. That's not true. In very rare cases is that true. But on a large scale, that's not true. Guys know what they do. They know what they're putting in their body.
Yeah,
that's all I have to say about that. It's a shame, and it's just boxing's going to move on. Deontay needs to move on. Forget Ortiz. He lost his shot.
Right.
And just line this up for Anthony Joshua.
Right. Yeah, you brought up Joshua, and one of the other people, whenever they talk about Joshua, is always Parker. And Parker won a decision over Yui Fury. 114,
yeah.
114, 118, 110, 118, 110. And from the looks of the scoring, it was just a fight. But Fury's management now has called the decision corrupt, and they claim that Parker was not even in the fight. And if he wasn't in the fight, he wouldn't have gotten 118 off of two judges. And tied with the third judge. So what's your thoughts on that one?
Well, I saw quite a bit of the fight. And from what I saw, basically the fight was, the fight lulled me. And it was just a case of Parker not cutting the ring off. Fury did not step into any punches. He boxed. He back foot boxed like Fury usually does. But Parker, he never cut the ring off. He chased Fury, and when he got in the corner, Fury landed some cute counter punches. But when Parker got him in the corner, he was banging away, missed most of the time. But Fury would just dance off the corner. Parker never really cut the ring off. He spent most of the fight chasing Fury. So, and Fury, he spent the fight, dancing, jabbing, but not really landing anything substantial. So, It really, I didn't see the scores 110 to 118. That was too wide. The fight was closer. From what I saw, it all depends on what the judges like. Do you like a guy who will move around, who can, punches, he would not avoid getting hit, or do you like the guy who's stalking, not really stalking effectively? Throwing punches, missing a lot. I mean, ineffective aggression or, effective non-aggression, really.
Right.
What do you like? I mean, it all comes down to that. So I don't think it's, Parker, he's the guy that they probably would more want to move on at. Fury can take the loss and bounce back. He, especially in England, Parker, they're trying to promote him worldwide. So,
that comes down to something that Bernard Fernandez said last week. He claimed that when he was at the Triple G fight, the Triple G was definitely the home favorite, and that he thought that any numbers that went that way were because of that.
with that, I think what happened, and what it is in the case, and it's not, I'm not speaking to Bernard Fernandez whatsoever,
right.
But in reading and even hearing and talking to people about the fight, they mm-hmm. thought that. And it's the same thing almost with Fury and it's not the same thing. But I mean, it's you have people who they don't want to go back on their predictions.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
the people who often are saying Golovkin won the fight easily, it's easy, Golovkin won the fight. Those
mm-hmm.
are the people who tend to predict Golovkin to win the fight anyway.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, I watched the fight again, and
mm-hmm.
I came up with the same thing essentially. And I thought going into the last round it was even. I thought they fought even in the 11th round. I really couldn't score who won that round.
Right.
But in the 12th round, I thought Canelo won. Okay. And
mm-hmm.
in the first round, I thought. I didn't see how people gave Triple G the first round. He landed
right.
a few jabs, but Canelo, he established something. He established the fact that Triple G couldn't come forward and let loose his punches without
mm-hmm.
without paying for them. And
mm-hmm.
that was the pace of the fight. Triple G came forward. He was real economical with his punches. When he wasn't, he missed for the most part. And
mm-hmm.
really, him missing and Canelo countering caused them, you know, to be economical. So
right.
when Canelo would take his breaks, Triple G would allow him to. For the most part. Later in the fight, I'm talking like the eighth round on. Later in the fight is when Triple G started letting his hands go when Canelo was taking his break. A little more. And Canelo would counter him. Canelo would he took some good shots. I'm going to say that. He took some good shots from what I thought was an arm-weary Triple G. People say,
mm-hmm.
Canelo has an iron beard. Yeah, he took a few good shots, but that was later in the fight when Triple G had thrown and missed big shots. When you throw and miss big shots, you get worn out early, easier and earlier. And Canelo was going to his body.
Mm-hmm.
So Canelo, he was more... He was tired because he had to work so much against a bigger guy. I go
mm-hmm.
through that all the time. Smaller fighters, they go through that all the time.
All the time.
Mm-hmm. But one thing I'm going to say is Triple G, you look at ring generalship also and ring territory. That
mm-hmm.
essentially Triple G owns the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And because you own the ring doesn't mean you own the fight. But
mm-hmm.
I can see how people could see it that way. Triple G chased
mm-hmm.
him. All Canelo did was run. Okay, that's
right.
true. But Triple G missed a lot. And when Canelo threw his few punches, he landed them hard.
Mm-hmm.
Canelo outlanded them in power punches. The only thing Triple G outlanded Canelo is jabs. And Canelo
right.
is not, he has a pretty good jab, but he's not a consistent jab.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I saw coming into the fight was that Triple G, he has a good jab, but he tends not to work off of it,
mm-hmm.
which means he'll jab, but then after jabbing, he'll have to take his foot positioning, he'll have to squat, he'll have
mm-hmm.
to open his elbows up, and then he'll let loose.
Yeah. Hey, I'm going to call... Dr. Chris, I'm going to leave the line open because I don't want to miss anything with you.
No problem.
There we go. Call found. All right, let's try it again. Well, what do you think about Budo Jack vacating his light heavyweight belt because he wants to move up in weight class?
I don't necessarily know. Think he's going to move up in weight. That
mm-hmm.
I mean, seeing him, he is not the biggest light heavyweight.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't understand his move up in weight, if that's the case. What I will say is, I don't know who his mandatory is and who he has lined up for his next fight. Right now, Badu Jack is a name that, in the light heavyweights, is looked at with curiosity, meaning it's a fight that he's making a name for himself. He's coming out of Mayweather's camp. The guy, I mean, he's one of the better, he's better schooled boxers, better learned boxers on the fly, I'm going to say. In his professional career, he's grasped more new knowledge than most other boxers. With that said, he's a small heavyweight, and fighters are looking at him like, you know what, the guy's good, but he's small, and I don't know if he's going to be able to take this, you know, or deal with this.
Okay, we have Dr. Chris with us right now. We'll see what his thoughts are. Hey, Chris, we were talking about Badu Jack, who's vacated his light heavyweight belt, says he wants to move up in weight class. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I saw him several times. I'd say he's average, just slightly above average as a light heavy. I don't think he's built powerfully big enough. I don't think he has the frame to be a successful cruiserweight. He could try, but I don't think he's going to do it. I just don't, you know. He didn't have a punch as a light heavyweight was all here. So I don't think he'll do very well as he moves up.
Hey, Dr. Chris, this is Zito. Did you have
Zito,
a chance
how you
to
doing?
I'm pretty good. You have to excuse the way I'm talking. I was sparring earlier today, and the inside of my mouth got cut up a bit. I have tissue in it. Did you get a chance to see the Canelo Triple G fight?
Yes, I did.
What do you think?
Well, I was under the impression that Triple G was still the guy we looked at 2 years ago. He's not the same fighter. He's lost something. I was really disappointed in his performance. I think he did win the fight, but he didn't win going away. He certainly didn't overpower Canelo. And Canelo, surprisingly, is pretty tough. He could take a shot pretty good. But I thought overall, Triple G's game plan wasn't too good. I don't like it. He traded. He got countered very easily. Got hit with a lot of uppercuts and return uppercuts and punches. I was disappointed. I thought it would be a better fight than that. It was close, but it wasn't outrageously. When I heard the decision, how unhappy everybody was with it. But when I saw the fight, it could have possibly have been a draw. Possibly. I mean, he really won by at least one, two rounds. But, you know, like Max Kellerman said, I could give him, you know, 6-6. But, I think that Triple G's age has caught up with him all this fighting. I think that he's just not the same guy. I think if they fight a year from now, you know, by the time they make a rematch, do all that, I think they're wise to let him age a year, and, because he definitely was not the same guy. So,
yeah, Chris, they were talking about the possibility of the. Of the rematch, but they're talking about taking it overseas because they can make more money. I guess I want to ask both of you what you guys think about that.
Where would they take it overseas? I mean, I'm thinking Canelo is. I mean, he's a bigger draw worldwide. So really, Vegas is the perfect place. Overseas, I don't know. Only ticket to was from Kazakhstan, and I don't I mean, it'll be a draw, but as far as financially, I don't think that makes, you know, more sense than Vegas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they were talking about Dubai because they can get more money coming out of Dubai because of the Arab Emirates pays an awful lot of money to have these fights put on. But, you know, when you talk, jumping back to money, you know, that's the way I had ADHD when I was a kid, and when I grew up, it had never changed. But talking money, it came out yesterday that the Mayweather-McGregor booked $65 million on the fight in Vegas. Supposedly the highest book that any fight has ever done. I'm sure Mayweather had a big part of that because he always bets on himself.
That's a lot of money. But when you talk about the United Emirates, Ali is former fought in Africa. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, if they want that, then that's going to happen. That's going to happen. Mm-hmm. They want to make that. I mean, that's enough money to make that happen.
Yeah. What do you think, Chris?
Well, they already made a lot of money. What about the tax situation in Dubai? Is it the same as other countries? I'm not sure. I'm not sure that either. I don't know. I don't know if the fighters would. It would seem to me, truthfully, they're better off fighting in this country. Why the hell do you want to go to Wembley Stadium? They have a bigger draw of people. I mean, they drew 90-some thousand people with a big heavyweight. But they're not going to draw that type a number in Wembley. But Dubai, I've never seen a big fight from Dubai. And then it's different training rounds, different places. I mean, it would totally be strange to them. They would be more comfortable with this country. And how much do they want to? I mean, how much more can you make?
Right.
You want to go through all that trouble, fly to Dubai, train in a desert? What the hell? You know.
One thing I do know is that promoters, they don't mind money. So when it comes down to that, the United Emirates, they have that money. And that amount, I mean, the amount, if they're going to, I would say, outbid Vegas, which I can't believe I'm saying something like that, but if they're going to outbid Vegas, well, I don't see any promoter in boxing that will turn that down.
Hey, let me ask you another question. The matchmakers are calling for a fight between Oscar Valdez and Carl Frampton early in 2018. Is that a good match? I'll ask Chris first, and then I'll go to then come over to you, Zeke.
The lightweight, Carl Frampton, the lightweight.
Yeah.
Lightweight champion?
Yeah.
Yeah, the one who fought Lou Santa
Cruz. You know what? His style, he's not a phenomenal draw. I mean, you know, he's a good fighter. He does put it out, you know. I mean, he fights a beautiful style. But I don't know that he's that big a draw worldwide that he I don't know. Frampton's a good fighter. So is the other guy. It would be a good fight wherever you go, but I mean, lightweights don't draw sensational money. What are they thinking of having it?
Well, Carl Frampton, one thing I'm going to say is the good thing about him is he's English. He's from Britain, and he can draw over there. He draws pretty good over there. He's style-wise, you're right. He's a beautiful fighter, very beautiful fighter. He has a habit. He has a little problem with consistency at times. He's not going to always be as slick as he thinks he is. Carl Frampton, I don't know too much about Oscar Valdez, but Carl Frampton is I mean, I think he's still eyeing Leo Santa Cruz. He has a bitter taste in his mouth, and I think he wants to get that back from his lawyers.
I mean, it was a good fight, but you know, nothing that I'd write home about. And so, you know, he does give you a good fight. He's a very, very pleasing guy to watch. You know, not a great puncher. I don't see the fight as a great, great draw. Anything that, you know, you're going to want to, like you said, it does draw good in England. I imagine that's as good a place as any to put the fight. But I wouldn't be too excited about it if it were somewhere unusual. I mean, I don't know. What the hell can you say? Like I said, a good fighter, another run-of-the-mill, good lightweight. But, you know, he's not wouldn't be my favorite fighter. I don't have him in the top three, I got Crawford up there. I got a few other guys ahead of me. Mediocre draw. You know, probably a good place is England. Forget about it, you know. Lightweights just don't draw as much as the bigger guys. That's all. That's simple.
Yeah, true. So, speaking of bigger guys, Chris, you heard that the third guy facing Deontay Wilder has failed a drug test?
Really?
Richard T is the big Cuban. He failed the drug test.
Wow. Surprises me.
Me too.
What did they find in his blood, did they say?
I'm not sure. I think it was a urine.
Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. Hey, guys, we had have a caller here. Leto, you had a question?
Yeah, I was saying, are they having talks of maybe Conor fighting another boxing match? And if so, I was just thinking one day that if he lets the Floyd Mayweather camp train him and Floyd can give him some tips, that I think it would be a pretty good fight, whoever he fights next from a boxing perspective. What do you guys think about that?
See, you want to handle that?
Yeah, what fighter were you talking about again? I'm sorry.
Conor McGregor.
Oh, Conor, for boxing, he has pretty good skills. Yes, he has pretty good skills for boxing. He's still raw, and he will still have to go to the drawing board. And with that being said, any of the elite level welterweights, Conor gets destroyed right now. I don't know if age is going to catch him before he's able to get that skill. It's as simple as that.
Okay, now let's say he went over to the Mayweather training camp and the Mayweather team taught him some things that are teach him how to survive in the ring, give him more smarts, work on some things that he didn't do with Floyd. And I know that Conor, from just fighting Floyd, has picked up a lot of good stuff. So now he go and get a further tune-up. And now he goes into a match, not with somebody who's quite as polished, but somebody who's maybe on the downside, or somebody who's in development. And I think it'll work out. Also, it'll bring a lot of money still, because Conor can draw a lot of money even after the fight he fought without Floyd.
You know what? In a way, you're right. But with that, I don't know if Mayweather's camp would be the best camp, per se. Conor's a tall, has good arm reach, and he more likely you fight junior welterweight or middleweight. With that said, somebody like Jonathan Banks, who trains a Klitschko, a long guy, somebody who uses that Conor maybe suited a little bit more for that. You know, Jonathan Banks is used to dealing with a more European style, definitely has, and the looks of boxing. Conor, he would need to take some amateur fights before even going back to dealing with that. He would need to take some amateur fights just to grasp some of the intricacies and fight some of the guys on that level. Now, if he dominates there, then we can step him up a little faster, a little more than the usual guy. It's simple as that. He really kind of has to take his hard knocks through boxing like other guys.
Oh, okay. You saying he's not quite slick enough yet?
Not at all.
He's too easy to figure out. Good point. I see your side. I see it. Yeah.
Chris, you have something on that?
Yeah. You know what? Curiosity made the first fight. You know, made it exciting. Made you want to watch it. You know, but now that we've seen it, I don't want to see it again. I don't think McGregor should fight as a professional boxer again. He's not in the category to justify making or drawing a huge amount of money. He's not that great a fighter when you think about it. It was a curiosity thing. Was different. I think that was fine. I saw enough. I mean, are you going to really say that you can't wait to see McGregor fight because he's a beautiful boxer? Hell no, he's not a beautiful boxer. He did survive. He surprised everybody, made it an enjoyable evening. But enough's enough. I don't really want to see McGregor fight anymore. It would take him years to develop into an accomplished fighter where he could go out on an even scale with one of the legitimate fighters.
Well, let's say a boxing needs a spark. Let's just say boxing needs a spark right now. Let's just say, and people will still pay, especially Ireland. Now, let's look at it from a business perspective. Conor has acquired some skills. Now, being that he's acquired some skills, his swag, his attention to draw people to him, and the curiosity of the people saying, well, he fought Mayweather, did he learn something? And we as people who know boxing a little bit, and you guys may know more, would probably say, okay, let's see how he developed. Let's say we pair him with somebody like a washed-up Pacquiao or somebody like a Calago. You know, people who's kind of washed up, who's kind of coming down, they wouldn't beat him too bad, but he would fare out just enough to where he would maintain the attention of people.
If Collazo or Pacquiao, they're not going to beat him too bad. They're going to knock him out. They're going to clean knock Conor out. Floyd was inactive for 2 years. And he's not a guy who was trying to knock you out anyway. He was defense first. Pacquiao is a guy who's trying to get at you. He's an active boxer. Still, I mean, his skills are certainly fading, but he's still on that championship level to a certain extent. Luis Collazo, he's older, but he still has that. He's one of the craftier fighters. So as soon as he sees Conor, you know, what he's doing, which is easy to figure out, he's going to wipe Conor up. I don't think Conor lasts maybe four rounds with these guys. Athleticism will get him too. After that, you know, we'll see how tough he is. Conor, he's really, I mean, the next fight is the same exact thing that we saw in the Floyd fight. He can't acquire those boxing skills that fast. especially dealing with the MMA. You saw how he was when he turned the corner on Floyd, how he was hammer fisting him to the head. Can't do that in boxing. I mean, and that's his instinct. He was stepping all the way around Floyd's back when he turned the corner on Floyd, and he was getting right up on Floyd, turning his back. That's an MMA move. You want to get the guy's back. He wasn't turning the corner, you know, stopping really a little bit behind his shoulder and getting a little bit of space for his punches. Kind of has long arms. He could have easily done that. He was moving the right way. But his instinct told him, let me get here. Let me get here and hammer fit. That's something, you know, that he has to get that out of him before he can get any of the other boxing and anything with the acute skills of boxing. I mean, he was out there. He threw punches when he wasn't tired. He threw kind of correct forceful punches, but his feet weren't under him, really. He didn't have his feet planted. He was bouncy toed. And that's the thing with MMA, where you have to kind of be, you know, watch for the takedowns, watch for the kicks. You have to kind of stay, you know, live on your feet. With boxing, when you want to punch, you tend to want your feet planted. So the punch is meaningful because you're not worried about the takedowns. You're not worried about things like that. You're not worried about, you know, anything attacking your feet or below your waist.
Right, because I was saying, you know, in MMA, Conor has a lot of power, but I was saying, where is Conor's power at? And now you make sense of it. I couldn't grasp it. Now you make sense of it. He wasn't sitting down.
He wasn't sitting down. He hit Floyd with I know he hit him with a pretty good straight left and a pretty good uppercut. Neither he was on his toes, you know, kind of leaning with both punches, and his body kind of was squared up a lot. In MMA, you want to be squared up. You want to kind of get, you know, be braced for everything and be able to get all your weapons off. Not really all the time braced up. Conor, even in MMA, he tends to fight sideways until he gets tired. So once Conor started bracing, you know, kind of, he let loose his barrage in the first two rounds, which Floyd let the younger, you know, more energetic, bigger guy do, then things start to settle down. The adrenaline wears off. Now you really have to start knowing what you're doing. Because adrenaline gets people through a lot. I mean, street fights, people turn into Superman. But then once you start having to breathe and think, that's what makes the fighter. And that's what Floyd knew. That's what every fighter knows. Once the fight settles down, I'm going to still be doing what I'm maybe even doing more. But, you know, that guy, the inexperienced guy, he doesn't even know how to breathe. Conor, he doesn't know how to breathe boxing. Boxing's pace. 3-minute rounds, you get the rest a minute. He doesn't know how to rest for the minute. I guarantee that. Why? Because he's used to the MMA 5-minute rounds. And then he's used to catching that speed rest. In boxing, you catch the rest as you catch the, you know, this round went this way, you catch your breath the way you can. You breathe through your nose, you try, and let out through your mouth. You know, sometimes you breathe a little heavier, take a little heavier breath, and then hold them and let them out. But boxing, even when you're fighting, you're more paced. Everything is more paced. I mean, some guys fight at a high pace in boxing, you know, a crazy pace. Sean Porter, for instance, in your chest from round one to round when it ends. But still, that's a breathing thing. He just can breathe, you know, to that point. But he's been beat by fighters who can deal with that pace. Keith Thurman, a guy with feet, a guy who has pretty good power, was able to match that pace by moving laterally.
Are you saying somebody like maybe a Pacquiao in his younger age?
Pacquiao in his younger age was a lighter guy, but Conor's a southpaw. He really. Just those acclimates. Pacquiao was fighting since he was a little boy.
Sean Porter pace is it similar to like a Pacquiao pace when he, let's say when he fought like in his younger years, Marco and Antonio Barrera, to where he had a hell of a pace going.
Pacquiao's pace, Sean Porter's pace is more skin to skin. He's more in your chest, throwing thousands of punches at you, trying to wear you down that way. You're not going to move. Pacquiao's pace was flurry. His feet were fast. He would dart in and out. He'd throw, you know, his hard, those hard, fast punches, and then he'd get out. He would move side to side. Pacquiao was more boxing educated than Sean Porter. That's not a disrespect to Sean Porter.
Okay.
Because both of them can fight. But Pacquiao was more into the arts of boxing, into, you know, the slip and dip of boxing. He's not the best defense. He's never the best defensive fighter. But Pacquiao, he had those little cute skills. He knew how to get inside and get what he wanted. He knew how to maybe dip out on the angle. Not all the time. Got him caught up quite a bit. But, I mean, he knew those intricacies. He just happened to be fast. Super fast, and he developed some power.
Hey, Z, we have another caller on the line, a man who's a man above men when it comes to trainers. Guy that takes his guys to the corner, stands there, talks to them, calms them down. He's worked with Winky Wright from the time he started his boxing career to the time he retired. He's also worked with Olympian Jeff, another St. Pete guy, Jeff Lacey, and Chad Dawson. Now he's working with Keith Thurman and our good friend Edner Cherry. Dan was a boxer himself, so he knows what the game's about. He knows how to keep these guys. And if you remember the last 2 weeks when we had some of the guys from the gym on, the one thing that comes down out of each of them is that he's a teacher. He doesn't stand there and yell at him. He stands there and teaches him. So we want to welcome our good friend Dan Birmingham. Dan, how you doing today?
Good. How about you guys?
We're doing great.
How's
doing
it going,
great.
Dan?
Cool.
Chris, you got any questions for Dan?
Well, I was still thinking about what the gentleman said about McGregor. I think the curiosity is over. You're looking at a mediocre fighter. What promoter would guarantee him big money? I wouldn't. I don't think there's anybody out there that would draw the kind of money he did with Mayweather. I think we've seen the last of McGregor in boxing. I don't particularly want to see him again because he don't have the skills to watch. I mean, he's not a skillful fighter. And like Zito said, he can't breathe. He does not know how to pace himself over 10 rounds. He'd run out of gas and get killed. I have no desire to see McGregor fight again. I did enjoy what I saw that night. It was curiosity, but those days are gone. So, you know. And Dan, I think Dan would agree. It takes a long time for a fighter to develop how to pace himself. You start out with four rounds, then you go to 6, 8, 10, and then 12. It takes a long time to develop, to learn how to preserve your stamina, to have something left in the later rounds. Some guys never learn it.
That's right. That's right. Let's not forget about an amateur career. They should have had a stellar amateur career. Most guys that have a great amateur career, at least they have a chance at becoming a champion. Do you agree?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And
that amateur career is crucial.
And that's what I was saying about.
That's Shirley, aren't you, with Jordan and Mikhail? When are they coming out?
Very soon. Very soon. Well, Jordan's already have one pro fight. He got a draw. He got a draw.
Great.
First, fought a real tough kid and got a draw. But Mikhail will be coming out. Mikhail Till will be coming out. Watch for him. He's a real talented kid. He sparred many rounds with the champ, Keith Thurman, so we're high on him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've mentioned many times when I come over there and I take a look at the way his hands are hitting the bags, you know, I almost have to ask him to slow down just so I can watch him. His hands are
there. He's quick.
Yeah,
he's real quick.
Yeah.
Well, Muhammad Ali is his idol, so.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Hey, Dan, a lot of people now are talking about Keith and Crawford fighting. What are the chances that we'll see that within the next year?
Well, hopefully. I mean, we'd love to fight Crawford. He's a 140-pounder. Now he's growing into 147, so I hear. So he's not as big a guy as Keith, but we'll have to see. He's a very talented, very skillful fighter.
Yeah, as skillful as Crawford is, Crawford is too little. He's too little for a lot of welterweights right now, if you ask me.
Yes.
Keith is at the top of the ladder. So that's even the biggest stretch.
Mm-hmm. He is, but Keith really has no problem making 47. He's weighed in at 43 and 44 for a lot of his fights, so he can stay there as long as he wants.
He looks in good shape, too. He looks real good.
Go ahead, Zito.
Oh, no, I was just saying, Keith looks real good when he's in the ring. He doesn't look like he's gaunt or anything. He doesn't look like he's slight or any hanging skin or anything. He looks real good.
Hmm? Well, he trains hard. And besides that, he watches his diet. He's very methodical about his diet, especially the last 9 or 10 weeks before a fight. It's very strict.
Dan,
I got a question.
Keith had gotten married and has taken some time off to get to know his family, his wife and his family. But last week there was something came out in boxing news that said that he had an elbow injury. Is there any truth to that rumor?
Yeah, he did have an elbow injury, and he's nursed it for a long time, and he finally went in and got it taken care of arthroscopically.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah, so there's a 2 or 3 month healing process there.
Mm-hmm. Good. Do you see him coming back
Somebody
in the ring in 2018?
Oh, I definitely see him fighting in 2018, definitely. Most definitely, probably around – they were talking about February, but, you know, it's Al Heyman's call. I believe Al mentioned around February or March at the latest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
How about Edna?
I know he's pitching.
Be coming up soon?
Pardon me?
I said, how about Edna? Will he be coming up soon?
Edna will. Sure. I haven't heard anything from Al as far as a date yet, but I'm sure it's coming shortly.
Great.
He should be defending his title.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Nice.
Somebody had a question.
Yes.
Yeah. I got a brother. He watched boxing quite a bit. He knows it a little bit. But he says one of the deficiency he see with Thurman that he can work on is he throw a lot of arm punches, and has he tackled that problem yet?
That's a trick. Oh, I'm sorry,
I disagree
Dan.
With that. Anybody that can hit that hard isn't throwing arm punches. I mean, he's turning his shoulder, setting down and following through on every punch, even his jab. He leans in real nice with his jab. I mean, a good fighter has to be like a baseball pitcher. You don't throw a home run. You don't throw a knockout punch every punch. You know, you're setting your guy up with speed, then you land the power. So I think if you see him land in speed, you might say, well, he's not turning his shoulder. He's not leaning in on his punch. But, you know, there's a method to the madness.
Well, one thing is you could tell when a guy is throwing a punch hard when you look at their feet and their shoulders. Their feet turn. It's like a little kid when they're having a fit. And you know how they twist their shoulders and their feet. Your feet twist when you throw a good punch. When you throw a left hook, a lead hook, your front foot is supposed to twist in conjunction with your hips and your shoulders. Just like when you throw a straight right, your hips are supposed to twist with your leg. And that's what, you know, I'm pretty sure that when you teach at the beginner stage, your punch, you can see that that's how you throw your power. Your power comes from your feet. You teach boxing feet up. So you see a guy throwing a punch, you could tell if the punch is hard or not. You can see a guy throwing an arm punch a lot because he's squared up. But if a guy is, you know, if he's torquing his body into a punch, you know the punch is coming hard or is putting his body into it.
Yes, I agree with that wholeheartedly.
I can't conceive how anybody could say that. Keith is a strictly an arm puncher. He's too much of an arm puncher. I think he's the opposite. I think he sets down on his feet nicely. He's got a lot of power at most of the time. Like you say, you can't throw crusher blows every for 10 rounds. You'd be carrying you out of the ring. You gotta pace yourself and so forth. I don't think that's a good description of Keith. Say that he throws too many arm punches.
One Keith into a more of a boxer. In his earlier career, Keith would definitely sit down and try to get you out of there. Not Fluffo. He would get you out of there. He was carrying the moniker of One Time, which was very accurate. And when you saw Keith develop into a boxer, he wasn't getting that one time as much. But I knew Keith hit hard, and my brother and I were talking about this today over the phone. Keith hits hard because he hit Danny Garcia and almost made him spin like a helicopter. Danny's tough. Danny's tough, and we knew Danny was tough after that. Made Danny putt shy for about 5 rounds. So I knew then. I was like, oh, okay, Keith, he really tried that one time. And it was a fast right. It was fast. Looked like he may have been an arm punch, but when you look at it, turned it right over. Turned his whole body right into it. Keith, he picks and chooses his times now. Dan, you've done a very good job at picking and choosing pacing. And the shot he knocked Robert Guerrero down with, a nice planted shot. Nice planted uppercut, if I'm
Yes.
Yeah. So a nice planted shot. He was dancing, moving his feet, and then planted his feet. Bam. That's the acute things in boxing. Even with like Connor, it takes years to learn that. It takes years to get that coordination. I mean, with your feet to even, it takes years to get that confidence to let that go. I mean, if you're not confident that you're not going to get countered or landed, you're not going to throw it.
I think Connor was more motivated by the financial benefit of that fight.
Mm-hmm. I would have been.
Yeah, Dan, one of the things that I think our listeners may or may not have picked up on is whenever you have a fight and you're on TV, you can look over into – they look over to the one corner – and the guys, there's about 6 guys there. They're all yapping, and the boxer's not even paying attention. Where if you look over in your corner, you're sitting there, very calm voice as you always have. You're talking direct to the man. He's got eye contact with you. And I think that's one of the reasons that your fighters are so successful.
Well, the guys that work with me in my corner, we discussed that before the fight, that I'll be the only one doing the talking.
Mm-hmm.
And if them guys want to yell some motivation, like the last 10 seconds, before the round mm-hmm. begins, then I'll give them a signal, go ahead, and maybe they'll yell a word or two, let's go, or come on, something of that nature.
Right. Good.
Dan, I had a question for you.
Sure.
As a trainer, give me an instance where you faced the most adversity with any boxer. As far as in during the fight,
Lacey Calzaghe.
Oh God.
Lacey Calzaghe. I mean, I knew Calzaghe was good, but I didn't think he was that good. And I, after the fight, he was that good. He's a great, great boxer, a master of distance and timing, and he's got a little pop on his punch.
Oh. That's an interesting fight. I mean, when you say that, and I laughed a little bit, thinking, what could you possibly tell Jeff in the corner during that fight? I know that.
Well, it was mostly motivation and not be discouraged. Keep your hands up, keep moving, and try to be first. Try to smother him. Try to work the body. tie him up 3-4 times around, you know, push off, and try to look like at least then you're in some kind of control of the fight.
Gonzaga was moving around throwing the thousand punches.
No, he was a great fighter. You know, and when I looked at him and Jeff at the weigh-in, I see this skinny kid. I mean, he's not very muscular, and I'm thinking Jeff is just going to walk this guy down. And it was, you know, it was the other way around.
That fight surprised a lot of people. Not only did Calzaghe beat him, I mean, he just took everything out of Jeff Lacy. A guy, like you say, couldn't punch or not, got a little kick of his punch, but nothing great. But he hit often. He hit. I thought that was a tremendous fight. And with his build and his strength, you just figure he's going to break him in half over 12 rounds. And the opposite happened. He totally demoralized Jeff Lacy. Totally demoralized him. Just beat him every way he could possibly get beaten.
Yes, I agree.
So, I mean, that was a great, great fight.
If Jeff wasn't the tough son of a gun that he is, I mean, Calzaghe probably would have stopped him in 7 or 8 rounds, but Jeff was just determined. He's just tough, real tough.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that was some. I mean, you know, like you said, it could have been stopped earlier. He had no chance of winning that fight at all after the 6th.
Yeah,
I
wanted to stop it, but he's begging me, Jeff, you got to do something. I'm telling him after the 8th or 9th round, I'll stop it. Don't stop this fight. I'm okay. Don't stop this fight. I said, well, you're getting hit every 5 seconds.
He was hoping for the one, hoping to land that one.
Exactly. And that's one thing Jeff had was that one-punch knockout power. If he caught you with that left hook especially, I mean, forget about it.
I got another question. How would you compare Keith Thurman's footwork in comparison to the impeccable Floyd Mayweather footwork? You know, Floyd is kind of like a person who knows his surroundings and where his feet are and every angle on the boxing ring. And I noticed sometime with Keith in the later rounds, his footwork isn't as sharp as Floyd as Floyd gets into the later rounds. Is that something that can be developed in Keith?
Oh, yeah. You know, a fighter can always improve on everything, but we're talking about Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah,
we're talking about Floyd Mayweather. Keith isn't quite Floyd Mayweather yet. He may be on his way, you know, only time will tell. But Floyd was a master of about everything in boxing. That's what made him so great.
Well, one thing is, Floyd used their feet differently. Floyd, to be honest, his feet were planted more. He would move, I mean, really against certain people, his feet were really planted. But Floyd, he would move slowly. His feet weren't really. Yeah, Keith is a lot more on his toes. Keith wants from what it looks like, Keith, he wants to jab, establish the jab, and he wants to establish his, not as much distance as much as his movement, so he can determine the distance. The distance is supposed to be a surprise. He's supposed to change distance at a surprise.
Well, I would agree with you, but I think that footwork in all sports is what makes a athlete, and I think that Floyd has solidified a great foundation of footwork, and now he's added his own to it, because if you go back to his younger years in boxing, it was kind of like Floyd was born with great footwork, like a Sweet Pea, like a Roy Jones. Like a Bernard Hopkins, where Thurman wasn't quite born with feet. Now, like in football, you put the best feet at cornerback because a cornerback, that position needs good feet. Versus Keith have to develop into good footwork versus Floyd kind of came from the womb with it. He'll get there, but there's some additives and elements, I think, that needs to come into the application of his workouts.
Well, if I could give you a quick example, Sugar Ray Robinson. You seen footage of Sugar Ray Robinson?
Excellent footwork.
Excellent footwork. Around, let's say around 10, round 9, footwork started getting a little unhinged at times. And that's because even in his younger days, not the welterweight days, but more the middleweight. But, you know, and that's because you move around the ring a lot. When you move around the ring a lot, then you're going to burn yourself out a lot. That's just natural. That's you're burning more energy when you're moving around, the more you move your feet. You're moving your fist and feet in conjunction like that burns you out quicker. So style of the fight, it's your style of the fight also. Floyd doesn't move around as much.
If you look at good footwork artists, they have well-developed hip flexors. And that's one of the problems with Trout and Zab Judah. When it gets later into the rounds, because of a lack of hip flexors and side glutes muscle, they tend to become wobbly-kneed and wobbly-hip, versus Floyd has a tighter sinew throughout his joints between his glutes and his quads, and I don't quite see that strength developed yet in Keith. But once he get that strength there, then man, Keith is going to be boom, bye-ow.
I think it's something.
Guys, we're just up against our clock here. Dan, I want to thank you again for coming on. It's always a pleasure to have you on. It's always a pleasure to meet you up at the gym and talk with you. And we hope to have you on and any of the guys that are coming up out of the gym, or we'd love to get Edner back on and Keith back on for separate times. But if there's any time we can do anything for you, please don't hesitate to let us know.
Send me a check for $1 million.
Okay, Chris, you got that?
Yep.
It was a pleasure talking to these guys. These guys really know boxing, and I like carrying on a conversation with these guys because they really know their stuff, all you guys.
Great. Thanks again, Dan. We appreciate your time. Chris?
Okay.
We appreciate your time, Chris. It's always a pleasure to have you on. Our boxing historian that knows as much about boxing as anybody that I've ever heard of it. And we really appreciate all your talents and taking the time out from the family football games and things like that to be with us.
All right.
Z?
No problem. I'm looking forward to talking to you guys every week. It's a pleasure. All right.
Thank you, Dr. Chris. Cool. Appreciate it.
All right, Dan. Take care of yourself.
You too now. You guys take care.
Say hello to Keith.
Okay,
all right. Bye, guys.
Hey, I will.
Take care.
I will.
All right.
Take care.
Z, you want to lead us out?
Sure, dude. It was a wonderful show. Wonderful show. I want to thank Dan Birmingham. Love his intellect, love his aspect. I want to thank Dr. Chris, love his intellect, love his aspect. I want to thank our caller. Pardon me, I forgot your name, but please call
Lito.
Again. You've got Leo?
Leo.
Leto.
I'm sorry.
Leto, thank you very much. Please call again. You've gotten a lot of topics going. Which I always want to thank you, a Fighting Words family. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob. And if anyone wants to hear any fighting words, please do call. Butch?
I want to thank you again, Zito, for being there for me every time I turn around that I need somebody. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, please, these are very tough times when the guys in uniforms and the girls in uniforms, whether they're fighting domestically or they're across the seas, please just give them a handshake, a wink, just let them know that you know they're there. These programs are dedicated to those who have lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Henler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Gowan, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Patrol Sergeant Robert Wilson, Philadelphia Police Department, Louisiana Trooper Steve Vincent, Harris County Deputy Sheriff Darrell Goforth, Prince William County Deputy Sheriff Ashley Gidden, Eustis, Texas Patrol Officer David Heffer, Hillsborough County Deputy Sheriff Charlie Kotloff, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Ardith Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, Sergeant Paulo Salto, New York Police Department, FDLE Special Inspector Vinny Galaccio, Corporal Stephen Ballard, Delaware State Police, Kissimmee Patrol Officer Matthew Baxter, and Kissimmee Sergeant Sam Howard. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields, and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the palm of his hand. Good night, God bless, and have a great week. County dispatched in 1999. All units be advised, 1999 has responded to his last emergency. May God rest his soul. End of shift.